life can get pretty complicated. In the Simply Practically Human podcast, Mark Lebusque talks to incredible humans to see the way forward more clearly through the complexity in the world and in our heads. Let's get ready to thrive.
Hey there, fellow human beings. Mark Lebusque here again for a Simply Practically Human podcast, solo, self-indulgent and short, sharp version. And again, I want to give a shout out to those people who have come back to me and let me know about particularly last week's solo episode, which was about the POC framework or the POC process, passion, opportunity, capability, and how to use that and be bold, brave and courageous and start to look at your career. For managers to start to not take career conversations as a tick and flick. For those that don't do that and use the time wisely, congratulations to you. Lots and lots of feedback from people on just not how relevant it was, but how timely it was as well. So if you haven't had a listen to that one, it was the 11th of March. Have a listen to it. It's supposed to be 20 minutes. I rambled for another 10, so it goes for 30, but some good things there to pick up. If you know anyone who might benefit from that, share it with them and give them a chance to have a listen and see if they can put some of what I talked about to simple and practical use for themselves. So again, thank you. Very, very grateful for those that have been supporting and plugging my podcast along the way. Geez, today I have just absolutely right now arrived back from what I'm going to call a long, long weekend. So here in my state of Victoria in Australia, we just had our Labor Day weekend, which is gives us the Monday off. And what Alison and I did, we actually took the Friday off as well, and we headed off to a beautiful little seaside town of Port Fairy in the southwest of Victoria, where they have the Port Fairy Folk Festival. And obviously with the last couple of years, there's been some challenges because we're talking about getting, I think, up to 20,000 human beings together in a small town, with lots and lots of live bands, some of them in sort of open areas, others inside massive marquees. So you can just imagine how much of a challenge that would have been. But starting with everything old is new again. And that was one of the things that we hadn't done for a long time. And it felt a little bit new, felt like we had to take some time to adjust and to adapt and literally go there together just as a couple without anyone else and meet some people along the way, including some people who live in the next suburb to us, which is sort of crazy in itself, but people from around that area, people from interstate as well, and just sitting around and connecting with people, getting back to socializing, sharing story, took a little bit of time. But what I like about it is that it doesn't take long as a social species for us to understand how much we've missed that ability just to chat, to share story, and to find some commonality, all in the pursuit of things that we both enjoyed, or we all enjoyed, which was listening to live music over 4 days. So big shout out to the organisers at the Port Fairy Folk Festival. It was a great few days for Alison and I, and to those people that we met down there. It was really, really nice to share some story. But just this idea of everything old is new again. I did chat a couple of weeks ago on a podcast of going back into the room and facilitating, and it just felt a little strange as I was heading there on the tram. So there was another thing that was old for me, because I'd done it most times when I'm facilitating in the city of Melbourne. I'd catch the number 58 tram in from Brunswick West into the city. Caught it for the first time in, I'm going to say, at least 18 to 24 months. And it just felt a bit weird, tapping on with my Mikey card, wearing the mask, being pretty close to other human beings, because as people are starting to move back into the city, there was quite a few people on the tram, getting off at the right stop to go and do my work, and then setting up and realising that one stage I hadn't plugged the HDMI cable into my laptop, so I was having some technical issues, which was something that I'd caused, not something that technology had caused, because it was a new, even though it was old and I'd done it many, many times, it was new to me that time. So there's been the tram, there's been the room, there's been the bloody traffic. I don't know if anyone else has felt this, but geez, the traffic's back to what it used to be. Something that I didn't miss was sitting in traffic. And particularly my kids will say, I do suffer from a little bit of road rage, not to the point of getting out and hitting someone's windscreen with a hammer or something like that, but let's call it verbal and vocal road rage at times, get a bit fired up. I've also noticed myself, and I reckon other drivers, because we hadn't been driving that much, I reckon our driving skills have gone to shit. You know, it's pretty important that you're concentrating out on the road. So traffic's been one as well. The removal of masks, you know, you still walk into places now and you think, should I have my mask on? Should I not have my mask on? There are certainly places where you need to have your mask on, in hospitals and things like that. Public transport, I think, is a good one as well. But then you're walking into different retail outlets and you're just wondering if you're doing the right thing. So taking some time to get back to that. Another one that's going to be interesting is tomorrow night. So I'm talking to you on Tuesday, the 15th of March. And interestingly, tomorrow night, it's the first round of the Australian Rules Football, the national competition. And it's at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, a famous sporting arena, if not the most famous sporting arena in the world. And myself and around about 90,000 other human beings will show up there. And this is the first time in a very long time that I've been anywhere with that sort of amount of people. And so that's going to be new to me, even though I'd been there before. I've been to grand finals and other things. Just the thought of going to a big event is a little strange, but I'm sure once I get along there with Tom, who's going along to watch his beloved Bulldogs, I'm sure that it'll be okay. So there's a few things there, and I talk about this, everything old is new again. And then the one I want to really focus in on today is a word that's been thrown around a lot and thrown around a lot pre-pandemic and will be thrown around a lot post-pandemic as well, is the T word, trust. So when I think about everything old is new again, I want to share some thoughts today on perhaps how we've missed an opportunity through what I'm going to call a two-year experiment, particularly in the workplace, and some of the downsides of missing that opportunity. But also I want to talk about some of the missed opportunities that are still there for people, for organisations, for managers, for people and culture teams, for HR teams, for whatever they call themselves these days, for the executive teams to, I guess, get out of their own way around trust. And I'm going to share some things around that. But I look at, before I go sort of digging more deeply into what's happened in those 2 years, I just wanted to share with you from my first book, Being Human, what I look at as the three elements of trust and how we can weave them into the story today and how we can weave those into how we take business and how we take work into the future. So the first one is motive. And what I mean by that is, do you have my back? Motive, I think, is a really important element of trust, one of the three elements. I certainly know it's very important to me to know that people that I'm working with, if things start to go a little bit to shit, go a bit crazy, that I know they've got my back, particularly if it happened to have been my manager along the way. So that's number one. That's really a behavioural one. The second one is capability. And I think this is more of the old school of, can you do your job? And what I mean by that is, can you perform the job to the standard that's required? Can you perform it within its technical requirements? And there may be some human requirements as well in that, but have you demonstrated the capability to be able to do the job that you've been selected to do? And then the third one is reliability. And again, a little bit based around, I think, behavioural and choice here is, do you do what you say you will? So when you make a commitment, do you follow through on that commitment? And that commitment might also be that I can't get this thing done in that time. So it's really about, are you good for your word? Are you reliable, whether it's delivering on a project, making a commitment, but are you doing that? And as I said, I think that one is more of a behavioural one, as is the first one, motive. Whereas the second one, I believe, is where we're starting to get ourselves into a bit of trouble as we come back into moving from, let's call it, remote working, virtual working, working from home, whatever label you put on it. I think the trust killer for us at the moment is, particularly for those who get caught in the old way and aren't looking at how do we use the experiment of the last 2 years to take our business forward is that they're hanging on to the old thing that capability is king. So the old way is that you show me that you're capable and then I'll trust you. Now, the way that it has worked, because we all used to be situated in the big concrete jungles, in the big cities or wherever you might have been, if you're in a regional town, country town, smaller town, you were more than likely working in an office, you're working in a factory, you're working maybe on site out of your usual office environment. But in fact, what you were doing was you were doing work at the time, wherever you might have been. And the interesting thing about it is, for many of us, and not all of us, because some people still went about their day-to-day work as they did, not many, but some did. For many of us, what it meant was that we couldn't be seen. And there's this crazy notion, and it's old-fashioned, and it's way past its use-by date, that if you're not seen, you can't be seen to be productive. You know, the old way the managers would stand there at 9 o'clock in the morning and look at their watch when someone walked in and say, oh, good afternoon. Or if someone was leaving at 5, they'd say something like, oh, it's all right for some. So this whole idea that I have to be able to see you to know that you're productive, I guess we ran a 2-year experiment to see whether or not human beings could be trusted to be productive when they weren't under, let's call it politely, the watchful eye of their manager, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year. And there's an absurdity to this, because one of the really, really positive things to come out of the last 2 years is that I believe the experiment has proved that if the question to be answered was, can we trust human beings when we can't see them, that they will do their work and be productive, I think the answer is an overwhelming yes. Now, I'm going to applaud organizations who have taken that to the next level and said, now we are going to reconfigure what work looks like, and we're going to give you opportunities to practice a bit of virtual work still, maybe some workplace flexibility, working from home, working remotely, whatever it might be. In fact, some organizations are at the point now where they're saying, you know, we want to see you for 5 to 8 days in the year, all coming together, wherever it is in your geographical area, to get that social connection. But outside of that, providing that you can demonstrate to us that you can be trusted, and I think the trust contract has absolutely been written, that will let you work from where it suits you best. Now, I think that that is a really, really nice way for organizations to demonstrate that they are trusting their people. And I guess it starts with the idea of that we've really got to change the mindset to, I trust you until you give me a reason not to, rather than I'm going to trust you when you show me that you are capable. So there's been a big shift in this, but unfortunately, whilst there are many organizations that are now putting together, I think, some pretty creative new workplace, hybrid working, virtual working, working from home policies and processes in place, I think there's still that dirty, nasty undertone of, for some organizations, that we need you to all come back to the office. Now, notwithstanding, I'm going to say this, some people want to come back to the office 5 days a week, and that's okay. Some people want to work from home 5 days a week, and maybe that's okay as well. And perhaps there's everything in between that on the continuum. But if you have failed the trust experiment, that is that you've still got your head in your ass thinking that if I can't see my people, they can't be productive, I think there's a few things that you face there. Number one is those people may well vote with their feet. And I'm going to tell you that if you've got some sort of absurd idea that the ones that will vote with their feet are the people that you don't want, perhaps the people that you haven't dealt with because you just avoided the work back in the way it used to be, you'll lose good people. You will lose good people who will start to look at doing things their way because they've had 2 years to experiment. Everything old isn't going to be new again for them, because what they're looking at now is that everything new for them is going to be new. And they've liked what's been new. And I think they're starting to make decisions around how they want to set their lives up, what sort of life design they want, rather than to be told that everyone needs to come back into the office. And we've seen a great example of this just recently in the States, where a CEO of a well-known organisation, let's say, has demanded that everyone come back to the office. And from what I understand, about 50% went back. Now, that was on a directive. It's sort of hard to believe that maybe 2 years ago, if that was the case, that the people wouldn't come back to the office. But they've had a taste of a different way of living, which includes their work. They've had a taste of a different form of life design, and they've liked what they've had. And what they're looking for is simply this, is that they are trusted to continue to deliver the work in a different way, to be trusted, to be capable, to be reliable. And also, I'm going to say, to have the motive or the motivation to have the back of the organisation. So there's the first one, is you're going to be risking losing good people if you're not prepared to look at the evidence from the 2-year experiment that says human beings can now be trusted to not be in the office and to be doing great work from somewhere else. Now, I'm also going to say this. This is a bit of a caveat here. Some selected choices of career and job simply do not equate with working from home and working flexibly. So for those people who are like, good on you, dickhead, like you haven't taken everything into account, well, here it is. There may well be some people who have to make choices about the type of work they want to do. So if they've had a bit of a taste of working from home because it worked for a while, but now there's a requirement to be back in on the shop floor or whatever it might be, that's a choice people now have to make. That's not the choice of the organisation, really. It's the choice of the person who goes, I really don't want to do that. I want to find another way. Well, that's your choice. And I don't think you can hold that over the head of an employer, because there are some roles and some responsibilities that require human beings to be on site, and there's quite a few of those. So there's some choices people have to make. So what's the answer here? And, you know, interestingly, we hear everything from, you don't have to come back into the office, but we want to see you maybe between 5 and 8 days a year in some sort of get-togethers where we socialise, and we do what happened at Port Fairy that I said before, that we just get to sit around and we tell story and we share and we catch up on commonalities and things that we humans love to do, which is to socialise and be social creatures. So there's that end of the scale. And then the other end, there's we want you all back in the office 5 days a week. With whatever reason sits behind that, I'm not quite sure what the reasons are, but we just want you back in the office. It could be to do with the fact that there's an exorbitant rental cost for the office. That could be one of the things. It could be that there's an idea that that's where work gets done best. That's perhaps an old way of looking at things that is no longer as relevant as it used to be. And it could also be to do with power and control, that for those more senior people who are making those calls around everyone back in the office, might be a good time for you to have a look in your mirror and work out whether it's about getting the people back into the office or whether it's about you being in control and feeding your ego, perhaps an ego that hasn't been fed as much as you'd like it to have been in the last couple of years, because you haven't sort of been walking the corridors with the look at me grin on your face as the most important, in your mind anyway, human being in that organisation. It's been more of the virtual stuff, where I'm going to say there has been more of a distributed power happening, because we aren't in a situation of people sitting around boardroom tables, going on offsites and doing all those things that made them feel perhaps better than what they were. So I think the answer is, I'm going to say all of the above, and it's somewhere in between. But what you've got to understand is, if you're going to put down a policy that says, in effect, you need to be back in the office, I'm going to say in brackets, because we don't trust that you're doing the work, you are going to lose people, and they may be hard to replace because people are voting with their feet. If you also look at saying, now we can let you work from home, but we want to now set you up with a keystroke or keyboard monitoring system, you're basically saying again that I don't trust you. You know, why don't you get them microchipped as well? perhaps that's another way you can do it, to find out where they are at every single moment. Because if, you know, someone does go out for a walk at 10:30 in the morning, take their dog for a walk, or they go and hang the washing out, or they just have a little bit of a break, I don't give a stuff about that, providing they get their work done. And nor should organisations. They shouldn't be in a situation where they're sitting there wondering if Mark's out having 9 holes of golf on a Tuesday morning, even though he's getting his work done. He seems to be more productive than he was when he was in the office. He seems to be more connected to himself and his family, his community, his fellow workers. But because I might think that he's gone out for 2 hours and swung the golf club, that he's not working, that's just an archaic way of looking at things. The other thing I want to say about what work will look like in the future and this idea of the trust contract is it's not a competition. So some organisations, as I said, have put in extremely flexible and hybrid working arrangements. But, you know, we're not trying to compete with each other here, because what suits one organisation will not suit another. And because we are so crazily caught up in, you know, being the first to do something or the first follower or whatever it might be, don't get sucked in to saying, well, we better be like them, because they're sort of like the poster boys or girls or whatever you want to call them at the moment. So don't get caught in this idea that we need to compete with other organisations. I can tell you how you won't compete is if you get really rigid and don't give any flexibility, and then that'll start to show in employee attrition. But you don't have to be right at the front end on this sort of stuff. If that doesn't suit your organisation, don't go there. So that's the first thing I'd say. The other thing that I really want to finish on today, because I want to make this short and sharp, as I've said before, is that the really, really human organisations that have seen this experiment for what it is, which is, can we trust our human beings when they are not in the office, and the answer has been an overwhelming yes, they've taken it a bit further and said, so now let's look at our human beings at an individual level. So I think this is an opportunity for organisations to look at the individual circumstances of their employees. And here's a good idea for you, maybe a novel one. Why don't you sit down with them at an individual level and have a conversation with them about, what's it been like for you in the last 2 years? What's worked really well for you? What have you struggled with? And I'm not just talking about your work here. I'm talking about yourself and your family. And your family could be a whole lot of different things. It could be humans. It could be fur creatures, whatever it might be. It could be the community that you're in that you call your family. Where have you really thrived? Where have you struggled? And how can we help you, and I mean help you, to create something for yourself in the future that is mutually beneficial for the organisation and for you, that will allow you to do incredible work, be incredibly productive, be connected to self, be connected to family, be connected to community, feel productive, feel like getting out of bed each morning. Now, whether that's getting out of bed and going to the gym, or getting out of bed, going for a walk, or whether it's getting out of bed at 5 o'clock and getting straight into your deep work, because that's the best time you do it. And then at 9 o'clock, you're in the gym, or you're taking the dog for a walk, or whatever you might be doing. Starting to have that really honest conversation and giving people permission to tell the truth and tell their truth about what's really worked for them. Because that's when trust starts. Trust doesn't start with a value on the wall that says trust, because it really shows in the way that we turn up, the way that we converse, the way that we give people some space to know that even though we can't see them, we are trusting them implicitly that they are doing great work. In fact, why don't you go back through their work with them, and this will show you that people can work remotely, they can work flexibly, they can be trusted, they can work virtually to get things done, but also we mustn't forget that they're a social creature and that they will want, some of them, to spend more time than others back in the workplace because that's how they function best within a group of people. And I think for any organisation, and even those who have said maybe 4 to 8 days a year, there must be some social interaction time. There must be that ability to build social capital that happens as we spend more time with other human beings, to build those relationships that maybe have always been more work-related or task-related. And when you get people together, we can start to find, as they have in COVID, because we've done some different things, had some different conversations, find those commonalities and really, really invest in your people in a way that they've never been invested in before, which is we trust you to be in a situation where you can tell us how you work best rather than us telling you how you work best, which is 8 to 5 or 8 to 6 or 9 to 5 or 9 to 9 or whatever it is, shift work, whatever it might be, rather than telling people how they work best, listening to them to find out that in that 2-year experiment, they worked much better under certain circumstances. Because you know what? The person who's just graduated will have different circumstances to the person who's been in the business for 10, 15 years or the person who's been in the business for 40 years. Now, the circumstances will be different. And this has been a great opportunity for this to be tested and to demonstrate to us that as an experiment, if the question was, can we trust our human beings in our organisation to still do great work if we can't see them? The answer has been an overwhelming yes. Now, if you've still got your head up your ass and you're in some reason trying to convince yourself that the answer is no to that question, well, I think it's time for you to step aside and hand over the reins to those who see trust as something that we give people, not something that they have to earn from us. And in a new way of working, that the old way of, I trust you when you show that you are capable of doing the work, and usually it's when I can see you doing the work, is yesterday's way. So what are you going to do? Are you going to trust people, or are you going to expect them to be untrustworthy because they've set themselves up to work in a different way to what they used to, which is a bit like the ball and chain at the desk? It's your choice. So there you go. That's today's one. If you love this, and I think it's a topic at the moment that's really, really getting some airtime, why not rate it 5 stars? Give us a little review and let me know why. And then if you liked it, and I think this is a great one to share with your friends because there's so much conversation, they might pick some things up out of this, please share it with your friends and get them to subscribe as well. But until next time, as I come to you working from my home office, where I hope that I can trust myself to get the work done, I say this simple way to sign off every time. Keep it simple, keep it practical, and keep it human. Bye for now.